podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It is the Anfield wrap after Liverpool are absolutely abject, unforgivably bad at Old Trafford from start to finish. Thank you for listening. Thank you for turning up. Dan Austin, Stu Wright and Josh Sexton, Andy Heaton for producing. That's the Anfield wrap, ladies and gentlemen. See you next week. It's awful, Stu. It really is. It's awful from the outset. It's awful from minute one. And what drives me mad is there were wake-up calls. There couldn't be more wake-up calls. The siren was sounded. And Liverpool just do not heed any of the wake-up calls. Find themselves 1-0 down, having gone out of jail on a couple of occasions. It's no surprise United start quickly. It really isn't. You shouldn't even have needed the wake-up calls. We all knew United would start quickly after what happened at Brentford. The only people on the planet who appeared not to know that are the 11 who started on the pitch for Liverpool.
Yeah, Liverpool are refusing to get out of bed this season, aren't they, really? Just to keep this metaphor going, really, I think Liverpool have just constantly been ignoring the wake-up calls. I mean, putting snooze on time after time after time in the games this season. I mean, everyone knew that there was going to be a reaction by Man United yesterday. It was so obvious. For Liverpool not to be prepared mentally to match them blow for blow in what is a derby, what is our traditionally our biggest game of the season, was absolutely shocking. But there's a sense of this isn't something new. I feel like this is almost the manifestation of what's been occurring now over a period, slowly but surely creeping into our play, a sense of complacency, a sense of lethargy, a sense of someone else will sort it out, a sense of self-indulgence around some of the positional play, and perhaps
self-indulgence.
I feel that there's potentially, I do want to slaughter them, but I actually don't really want to call people out, because it's very difficult to point the finger, whether it's by design, by someone telling them to do something, or that they're doing it out of their own volition. Okay. But I look at changes that are happening in terms of things that have worked really well in the past not happening right now. So, for example, one of the biggest weapons in our armoury has been Trent's play from the right. And this is not something that just happened in yesterday's game. We've seen and we've spoken about it. I've even eulogised on it and been quite optimistic in the past about the evolution of his positional play into more central areas. But it's not having an impact. And in a game...
It's having a negative impact.
And when you're finding yourself in a rut, when you're finding yourself sleepwalking into the season, can we get back to doing the basics, please? Can we get back to doing what is proven and works well and match that with top-level attitude and fight? But there's too much at the moment, I think, where we're doing a lot of talking in the press. We really like to talk about our intensity. I know that there's been, I'm not having a go at the coach there. I'm not saying it about his book, but there's a lot of talk about Liverpool, and I feel that there's just okay. So cycles in performance. A lot of top organisations refer to the sigmoid curve, and they talk about things moving in cycles and being and to avoid going into decline, you've got to be aware of when you need a kickstart again. You know, when an organisation has its inception, there's normally a huge amount of change, a slight decline before a period of rapid growth. And once an organisation reaches its maturity, that it's then in danger of going into a period of status quo and decline. The top organisations and the top leaders realise this beforehand and try to avoid hitting a sustained period of maturity. They like to introduce a kickstart. Alex Ferguson was brilliant at that. He ensured his own longevity by introducing new coaches along the way. And you know, you can do it in various ways with big signings, but they've got to be the right signings, to quote the manager. You can change your coaching staff, or you can change your leadership, and I'm sure none of us want to do that around this table. But I do look at Liverpool's team last night. It was the same team, apart from two players, as a team that played Leicester in 2018. We signed Milner in, 2015? It's now 2022. He was 30 or 31 at the time. He's now still starting in Liverpool midfield away to Manchester United. I do worry that this period of time, this fantastic period of time that we've been enjoying over the last few years, I worry that we could almost be blinded to the fact of it could come to an end if we don't kickstart it.
I'll bring Josh and Dan in a minute because I want to talk about this kickstart notion. Do you think that's part of the reason why I'm looking at what looks like? There's a lot of people right now, for instance, calling for a change of formation. Liverpool have had a really quite significant change of formation. They've certainly had a quite significant change of what it is they're asking these footballers to do so far this season. You've mentioned Trent. So when you think about sort of have a conversation around kickstart, do you think there's something here where he's tried to do it with the personnel by asking them to do markedly different stuff? Because I'm seeing them being asked to do markedly different stuff. I'm seeing loads and loads of unorthodox, even by our standards of unorthodox football. I've been seeing it in all three games. Do you think he's tried to actually kickstart them in terms of not changing personnel, not changing coaches, but change what he's asking of them?
Possibly, but that's really impossible for us to say with any degree of certainty whether it's happening. You know, you'd assume it's happening because of messages that are coming from the leadership, from the top, in terms of the way players are evolving and what they're doing. But there's also a certain sense of personal responsibility. You can't tell me that Virgil van Dijk's performance yesterday and Fabinho's performance over the past few months is because of any. Evolution within the team. I think there's also players got to look themselves in the mirror and go, am I giving what I gave 4 years ago? What's spurring me on now? I also think that there has been attempts to kickstart. You know, we can't say that the club haven't spent at all. You know, we brought in a player in Diaz in January who looks a really exciting talent, but his output at this point is not the same as what the fellow in that position was before, who's now left.
Or Diogo Jota.
Diogo Jota, you know, we've brought him in, and you know, listen, I'm looking at that last night going, oh, Jesus, I wish we had Diogo Jota around. But the manager clearly thinks that he's not the entire solution either, because he's just spent 80 million on another centre forward who's yet to prove anything. We've not got a huge sample size, to be fair to the lad, but he's not proven anything yet. And I'm looking at it going, well, there's a huge amount of weight of responsibility now for goals on Mo Salah, who we've contrived to put further away from goal, by the way.
Well, yes.
And we've got a midfield that consists of absolutely no goals at all. So there's more to this than Liverpool just needing a midfielder. I think that there may well be have tried to be a tactical, strategic evolution. I think you're right in some of the positional play, but if it's not working and Liverpool are sleepwalking, can we get back to earning it and getting back to basics and doing what was proven?
Getting back to basics, doing what's proven, Dan. As I say it again, they get so many warnings, but this is the worst way to lose a game of football, as far as I'm concerned. It's certainly a big game of football, is by being meek, and they were meek throughout. We'll get into some individual performances. Stu doesn't want to call anyone out. I've got a shopping list. But there is, within that, I feel as though what overwhelmed it to me, what was just present across the board, was just ultimately a lack of desire to genuinely impact the game. Liverpool were just meek, and it's the worst thing I think you can say.
Yeah, sometimes Liverpool or any other football team that's as good as they've been over the past few years will be shit. That Watford one, for example, the year that they won the league, where they were just terrible everywhere, and you just have to cop for something like that from time to time because it happens. But stood in the ground last night, they just didn't really seem to care that much. They didn't seem kind of too fussed about what was going on around them. There was no sort of desire to fight back. So they started slowly, but they didn't really get any quicker from there, I don't think.
They're all right for 10 minutes before half time because United are shattered, and that's why they're all right. United are shattered.
So it didn't feel like a reaction of someone saying, you know what, we need to get a grip of ourselves here. You go and do this that you need to be better at. You do this. I'm going to go and stand here, which is a different point. It wasn't a kind of conscious, oh, we're going to do these things differently, or we're going to be better in this regard, or we're going to raise the intensity or anything like that. They just happened to have the ball a bit more, and United were happy to sit in their own half for a little bit because they were conserving energy. I think that's what is the most surprising thing, really, is that in none of these three games that they've played so far do they seem to have any belief in themselves or each other to just beat teams that they should beat. And I don't understand that, because even last season when they were going behind, they then by and large won those games of football. So it happened to Villa, it happened at Southampton and stuff like that. But we in the away ends then thought, there's still something in this, this can still happen. And the players on the pitch clearly thought it, because they would start slowly, you know, at Villa, for example, but then they immediately went up the other end and scored to equalise, and then were the better team for the majority of the rest of the game. So I don't understand why. Okay, so the same setup, the same first 5 or 10 minutes can happen. Sometimes you can just get done by a sucker punch, someone can make an individual error, yada yada, that means you go behind. But now they just also seem to look at each other and think, ah, well, that's that then. been beat, haven't we? Or not going to win, aren't we? And I don't understand that, because everything that's ever been good about them for 7 years under the manager is that they constantly believe in themselves to do something good, and they always back one another to be able to get out of a hole. And at the minute, it's the absolute opposite of that. They seem to be going on the pitch with a fatalist attitude all the time.
On that, what I find strangest about this, about all of this, is the first game. And the first game's the game against Manchester City, when they did look full of belief, not just full of belief against a tired, dispirited rabble. You know, they weren't playing that sort of team. They were playing Manchester City, and they looked full of belief. And that's what I find so strange about them. You know, it feels as though is the way the first half an hour against Fulham got into them to such an extent. I don't know. I don't know what changes from that game against Manchester City to where we are now. I'm happy to talk about hangovers, and I think there is one. But they didn't look like there was a hangover when they were playing Man City at Wembley. At Leicester.
If there was something that happened in a game as well, say that started for 20 minutes really well at Fulham, and then someone has had a really horrible injury or something like that, and that's the kind of thing that can knock you as a team and can change the way that you play, then you sort of get it. But it was from the very outset of Fulham, wasn't it? I mean, within 2 minutes, Mitrovic just walked through everybody and should have scored a goal. So if it's something that has happened, then it's between that Manchester City and Fulham game, and obviously no one beyond the people that use that training ground as a workplace would be privy to that. It could be so many different things, but it's definitely their attitude. But what is that attitude? Is it that they're all mentally exhausted from what they've been doing for so many years, and so kind of intensely and physically intensely towards the end of last season? Have they got a bit complacent? Have they basically won everything now, some of them, and are just a bit demotivated? Is it arrogance in a way, and that you think they should be turning up and just beating all of these teams because they're better than them? I don't know, and you sort of never really will know. You can infer
I'm gonna
things.
Ask Josh in a second,
you can infer things from certain players' body language and things like that, but then it can be different things for different players. So one player might be playing really badly and have a bad attitude for one reason, maybe because he has won everything and is now just thinking, well, what am I sort of still doing here? And then another player might be doing it because he is being a bit arrogant and thinking that he's better than his opposite number, and it's going to be really easy for him. So it's not necessarily just a case of they're all doing this one thing badly. At the moment, they're really bad in every area of the pitch. You could go through every one of them last night and try and pick out who was worse, and I wouldn't really make an argument against anybody, to be quite honest. Every single thing that a Liverpool team should do, they're not doing. I've got no idea how they're meant to score a goal at the minute.
Yep.
Every goal that they've scored just sort of happens. The Diaz one is a piece of absolute individual brilliance. The other three just sort of take place. It's not really like, oh, that's a plan of how Liverpool are meant to score goals. They also look like they don't know how to defend against various different kinds of attack and different attacking players. So they really struggled with the pace of Zahar, but then they really struggled with the height and the weight of Mitrovic, completely different kind of player, didn't know what to do with either. So it's
and the shit in midfield.
Yes, exactly. So, you know, they don't really know what they're doing as individuals, but as a collective three. So again, it's not just sort of, I'm not saying don't buy a player in a particular position, but I've been at all three of the games, and to me, the idea of dropping €40 million on someone who plays for Leipzig or whoever doesn't solve 99% of the things that are going on. And that doesn't mean that a new player in some position wouldn't help. But all of the existing players that currently play for Liverpool, that everybody knows are brilliant and they've been brilliant for many years, are fundamentally doing a terrible job in all regards. And finding out why that is and changing it is the more important thing to me than who they might have sold that they're missing or who they haven't bought yet that they're missing.
All right, then we'll get round to my argument for Mick Harford in a bit. Josh, there is one for the teenagers. There is the list there from Dan, and I think it is fair to say that different players could have different problems. I think that that's something that, you know, when we are looking for a one-size-fits-all solution, and I am about to ask you for one, but when you are trying to think of this as one-size-fits-all, to me, the last night looked like a hangover. It looked like a hangover, and what I mean by that is almost like a literal one that we all of us around the table have suffered at some point. When you're hungover, when something gets hard in your day-to-day life and you have a hangover, it feels insurmountable. And that's what the first half an hour performance from Liverpool, and I'd say 15 minutes in the second half after it went 2-0, looked like. It just looked like, well, what are we meant to do about this? And that's almost what I mean when I say about the hangover thing with one eye on last season. It was almost like, well, this isn't fair. What are we meant to do about this? And that, to me, is is it verges on unforgivable, frankly, from you know, not least because they're playing a game, play the game with full commitment, and it just looked to me like they just thought, ah, this having to deal with these, this is all a bit mad. There was the protest outside, etc., etc. They just looked like, ah, we can't be bothered, and that's whatever there is the root cause in that. That's what I just found unforgivable.
Yeah, and the hangover analogy is almost a good one, because when you're hungover, like you say, the big things feel insurmountable, but also sometimes you genuinely struggle to go back to basics. Like sometimes
you have, the small things.
Sometimes you have to consciously breathe when you're hungover, and that kind of thing. Some things just don't come to you in that sense. And I just wonder whether Liverpool are just struggling a bit to get back to what is and was basic about them at the moment. I wonder whether there's this thing that, you know, Jurgen Klopp's spoken for years about, the idea of needing to be hard to predict, and, you know, needing to be unpredictable playing against teams, needing to, you know, drag teams down to our level and stuff like that. I just wonder whether he's almost made it too hard for these footballers to play for Liverpool at the moment, because that's sort of what it looks like. It looks like everyone is struggling to do their job, even in the most basic sense, that it's become so overcomplicated to play. Like you've put on the agenda there about the massive gaps between everyone. That's what it feels like. It feels like each player is sort of operating on like their own island, and like they have to do everything themselves. Like Trent at the moment looks like a lad who's never had any link up with any player in that Liverpool squad. He looks like a lad we've just signed in the summer who's trying to find his feet all over again. There's this really strange thing about the lads who previously made really hard jobs look easy, now making what should be relatively easy jobs. I don't know if that's almost unfair to say, but what we're asking for here is just the basics of being professional football players, which they don't seem to be actioning. And I do wonder whether that's because their jobs have just been made a little bit too overcomplicated. And that's where the idea of, you know, changing formations and things feels almost like it's not the solution to me, because Jurgen Klopp has constantly evolved this Liverpool side. He's constantly tweaked the formation. He's constantly, you know, made little alterations here and there. Trent's position has slightly altered over the years. Salah's position, as Stu said before, has slightly altered over the years, or it seems to be transitioning the complete wrong way, to be honest. There is just this weird sort of, I don't know, almost like paradoxical thing we're left with here, where they look like 11 lads who are playing football and not particularly playing it together.
Let's start slaughtering a couple of them. You can go first. And then let's be relatively quick, because they are our heroes. They are good lads. You mentioned there, Trent. He just, I think your point about who's he connecting with is really valid. He just seems so off it to me, with and without the ball. It's not just one or the other. I thought Gomez's range of passing was really impressive at times last night. One of the few bright spots, I thought Gomez played well. I've been intrigued to see that. He's had a fair bit of criticism post-match, certainly when there's other lads lining up in there. Trent, to me, just looked so far off it with and without the ball.
Yeah, there's this weird thing with Trent that, like, I just thought he looked consistently panicked last night. And that's not even just panicked in a defensive sense, because I think we've seen that enough down the years. And I know there's a lazy narrative. I don't think Trent is a bad defender, but Trent can look panicked in a defensive sense sometimes. And you saw that over and over again last night. But then also, like, panicked on the ball, which is, like, I've never really seen that from Trent, bar maybe his first few games in a Liverpool shirt where it was baggy on him and he had a skinhead and he was you know, a little sort of gangly Scally almost. He's not looked like that player since then. He's not looked like, you know, being on the ball and passing the ball is difficult. But last night and a couple of times this season, to be honest, he's made that look like it's really difficult to him. And I do just wonder whether that's, you know, because of what I said before about the idea of the players operating on islands, because there's a thing that Trent used to be able to link up with players and allowing him to get that space meant that he was able to take risks. He doesn't seem to be able to engineer that space at the moment. And even when he does, he does the wrong thing. He takes the risk that's not the risk to take, basically. He ends up doing something wrong. There's loads of times last night where he ends up just sort of clipping this ball to the, like, the far left wing, and Diaz isn't really there to receive it because Diaz cuts inside. Robbo's not there to receive it because he's not high enough up in his position, probably because he's shitting himself by everything that's gone on as well. There just seems to be such a disconnect, and Trent, for me, sort of embodies that at the moment.
Trent Alexander-Arnold's in this position where, for me, and I think you can say the same thing of Virgil van Dijk, in the round, i.e. across the whole game, the performance isn't good enough. And then there's the key moments where the performance is absolutely dreadful. And that's what's painful. You know, the same Trent, Virgil, I think these are key points. I think Henderson plays well in the 10 minutes before half-time, but apart from that, is absolutely awful and is dreadful, genuinely dreadful for the second goal, up to and including not taking the book. And you can pick any one of these three. We're going to do Firmino separately. You can pick any one of these three that you like in terms of Trent, Virgil and Henderson. But my point here is that the bad in the long run of the 90 minutes, and then at the key moments, they're absolutely dreadful.
Yeah, I think sticking with Trent, the second goal, I was astonished. I was absolutely astonished at how poor he was there in terms of whether it's decision-making, attitude, being switched on. But there's a turnover in midfield. And, you know, at that point, Trent is not... Well, you wouldn't say necessarily he's in the great position. He's in like a half position between... He's almost doesn't know whether he's going to get ready to go if we get on the ball. So he's just kind of like slightly ahead, maybe 5 yards further up the pitch than Gomez and Van Dijk. But and there's a fairly sizable gap. There's a turnover and Martial gets the ball in midfield and Rashford pulls directly into the channel between Gomez and Trent. And as soon as Martial gets on the ball, Gomez, Van Dijk, who, you know, as we said before, didn't have the greatest of the games either, but they drop. They drop. They recognise the danger and they drop. Trent doesn't. Trent stands still. Watch it back. He stands still. And not just for a second. He continues to stand still as the ball is played into his channel. And Gomez is desperately trying to, you know, cover the situation, but is isolated. And then we know what happens then as Rashford goes through. And I just think that, to me, was the epitome of the attitude's not right, what Dan was saying before, the decision-making, whatever it is, whatever you want to talk about, it's not right. It's absolutely not right. And Trent's decision-making on the ball, you know, we can talk about his defensive play when he's not playing well like this, but on the ball, I just thought his decision-making was absolutely shocking. He went long and direct far too many times to, okay, you might think Lisandro Martinez is small, but Bobby Firmino's not massive either, and they do have a tall lad alongside him, and the amount of times he went direct high to Bobby to try and fight for it, or pumped it down towards the left channel, and again, with no hope of us being able to retain the ball, it was just astonishing.
In amongst all of that, Dan, there's, said before, it could literally be Virgil's poorest display for us. He's terrible for the opening goal. All the way through the game, he just seems discombobulated. As I say, it's in key moments, not doing the right thing. And then it's across the course of 90 minutes, it's not doing the right thing.
Yeah, I mean, he was dreadful at Fulham. I didn't really think he could get much worse than that, but then definitely did. And seemed surprised by the fact that James Milner was saying, why the fuck have you just stood still? When a man was shifting left and right and looking to kick the ball at the goal, seemed to take it as an affront more than anything, which I don't understand. That to me seems like an attitude thing. You know, he's capable of moving his body, stood at centre half when someone's having a shot. He's chosen not to for whatever reason. Not moving was not in any way the right choice. You can't make an argument for, oh, I was doing a good job there by standing completely still as he shifted to my right and then took the shot. That was a sensible thing. You can't say that was a sensible or logical thing to do. So then it's, why did you just stand there then? Why did you just think that was the right thing to do? Was it that you can't be bothered? Was it that you're pissed off at everyone else for having made errors in the build-up and then therefore think, well, fuck it, it's going in anyway? You know, whatever point is
about that goal, there seemed to be a lot of fuck it, it's going in anyway, yes, from everyone apart from Milner.
Yes, and to be honest, I felt it in the away end, but I didn't play for Liverpool. So as soon as they sort of played that ball in, and Alexander Arnold didn't really move to cover, I don't even know who it was, he was played in down the left Alanga. He just sort of ambled back and was like, well, he's gone then. Can't get that. Not much point me doing much else. From that point onwards, it seemed like, apart from Milner, who tried to throw himself, it seemed like everyone else was just sort of, I can see that there, haven't we? Just try and crack on once we kick off again. So again, having that sort of fatalism from the outset of a match when you first go onto the pitch, but then from certain attacks, whether sometimes the Liverpool attacks where, you know, the ball will get played into a certain position and it feels like everyone goes, well, I'm not going to get that. So I'll just stand on the edge of the box rather than making the run in, and he led it away, and then we'll try and start again, maybe, see if that's any better. But it also happens at the other end of the pitch, and Van Dijk, to me, seems to be the sort of major proponent of that at the minute, where, I used the Mitrovic example. They just walked through. He just walked through the centre-halves at Craven Cottage within a few minutes of it starting, and no one had a go at each other afterwards. Everyone was just sort of like, oh, well, you know, that happens. And I don't understand that, because, you know, there's a difference between being a really relaxed and composed centre half and being one that's not moving. You know, they're not the same thing. So it's not down to, oh, well, that's just the way that he plays or something like that. That's you know, in that moment and throughout the game so far, a deficiency in his attitude for whatever reason, I don't understand. But it seems like maybe it just started in the first few minutes of Fulham with everyone for different reasons. And then therefore they've all got this fatalism about them where they think, well, if everyone else isn't really going to bother them, fuck it, I won't. And then, if everyone's doing that, you're on a harden to not. And every week, your best case scenario is scrape a point against a shit team. If you keep doing that, you're going to lose most weeks against most football sides.
Henderson for the goal for the second. He's dreadful. He's dreadful in the fact that he's responsible for the ball sort of bouncing off him. But for me, it's not about that. That happens sometimes when you're playing. You've got to accept the swings and roundabouts of that in an intense game. My point is, in an intense game, what he then doesn't do is the thing that everybody should do, which is you just take your yellow card. At that point, mate, you just take your yellow card and we all start again and you go, it's one of them. I cocked up there. The yellow card, the price that you pay for it, it's still 1-0. I'm not going to remain in this position. Fabinho's coming on, I'm either moving or I'm coming off one way or the other. But at least it's only 1-0 at that point. I think it's absolutely dreadful in that moment. As I said before, I think he's all right for the 10 minutes before half-time. I think he moves the ball about as well as any Liverpool player to find someone. But there's also just big holes around him, and he's responsible for addressing them as well in the first half an hour. My point is, Josh, it's a performance that lacks ruthlessness and it lacks decisiveness from Henderson. And he is the captain. And a lot of what we talk about his virtues, is around that captaincy. And for me, failing to do what had to be done in the key moments is absolutely appalling.
Yeah, I think ruthlessness is the right word. And there was sort of like a snide missing from Jordan Henderson's performance. And maybe this is the thing that's sort of, you know, endemic of Liverpool these days. Liverpool are sort of, you know, one of the biggest criticisms you could probably level at the Liverpool side is that sometimes they can be a bit too nice. You know, they're always topping the fair play leagues and these kinds of things. And sometimes they aren't, you know, getting in the referee's ear enough or any of that kind of thing. But I almost don't think that taking the yellow in the scenario you're saying is even really that snide. It's just sometimes it's just the logical thing
just
to
do.
Just what
you do.
Exactly.
What would Rodri do? Rodri would jump on his back.
Yeah.
Rodri would be absolutely say, if you're playing football now, you're piggybacking me. That's what's happening now. That's what Rodri would do. He would just jump on his back.
And City are full of that snide, and maybe it's almost not the best comparison, because, you know, we consistently talk about City's professional fouls and how, you know, Fernandinho was the expert. I wasn't even committing about 8 to 10 yellow card challenges before he actually got a yellow card. I don't really expect Liverpool to be going around doing that. What I do expect Liverpool to be doing, and particularly, you know, Jordan Henderson, the captain, I expect him to just be making the logical decision. And in that scenario, it was just the logical decision to take the yellow card, to break the game up, to be able to, you know, get yourselves back in shape.
Yeah,
have a go at a couple of people and reset. And he just didn't do that. And that's you know, it comes back to what Dan was talking about before, the idea of, like, no one really seems to be having a go at each other, bar Milner last night having a go at Virgil, which is, you know, become the sort of image of the game now. That should be Jordan Henderson. Jordan Henderson should be every time there is a reset, every time there's a pause in the game, going, are you doing your job properly? Hey, you get back into your position, that kind of thing. Like, making sure that everyone is on the same page here. Because, again, like, that comes back to what I was saying before. It didn't feel like they were on the same page. And if you're the captain, one of your biggest jobs is to make sure that everybody is. And last night, it didn't look like it, and a lot of that does fall on him.
Robertson looked goosed when he went off. I just want to talk about that in general, to be honest with you, Stu. Between the injuries and the fact that Robertson is not alone in looking goosed at times, it becomes valid to wonder what's gone on over the summer. It throws back in the notion of hangovers and so on and so forth. The load on every player appears to be massive, but simultaneously, I quite like to feel like they were running more. As basic as that sounds, I can say the load on them looks massive, but then we're sort of looking at the game going, but United are doing well more running than you are, boys. They just look goosed. I that's something I'm struggling with. I really am. They look like it's April, and it's emphatically not April. I'd like them to not look like it's April when it's August.
I think what's required of Liverpool players when things are operating as they should be, there is a heavy load on them, but mentally you can get through that when things are going right. You know, if the winds are coming, then you can keep running. And I think as, you know, things become harder, the team shape we've spoken about, it's not working. The patterns of play that I'm sure that they're trying to work on in training, it's not coming off. And I think when those things happen, it's human. It's normal, isn't it, to feel like you're perhaps running in treacle. Everything does seem a little bit harder. Liverpool and these players, I said before, you know, the vast majority have been with us for, you know, a good amount of time now. And a lot has been put upon them within that amount of time, you know, no more so than last season when they play every single game humanly possible and then have a curtailed pre-season and break. But I don't think, when you look around the rest of the league, I don't think that should be applied as a huge excuse here.
No.
Professional footballers and the professional coaches have got to find a way to motivate themselves and motivate those players and get them mentally attuned and equipped for the season ahead. That does not seem to be the case.
It doesn't seem to be the case. I mentioned Firmino earlier, Dan, as part of the thing that I just can't get my head around. You know, people can have conversations around the decisions that they are making around whether or not they want to purchase another midfielder. Liverpool, I think, had decided that the numbers were sufficient. They may well change their mind at this stage of proceedings for any one of a variety of reasons, but you could see the arguments in either direction, whatever it was you thought. What I'm really struggling to get my head around more than anything else, I'm still not entirely sure with fullbacks going and playing number nine, I want to be honest, but we'll put that one to one side for a minute. The thing I can't get my head around more than anything else, though, is the distance between Diaz and the goal, Salah and the goal, between Salah and Diaz in all three games, with the possible exception of the last 30 minutes against Palace. And I just can't comprehend moving the person who scored the most goals in the country since August 2017 further away from the goal, like actively trying to do so. And then that's compounded by the fact that Roberto Firmino appears to have decided that the final third isn't massively his business. And that makes no sense to me either. Like, Firmino to me looks like he either needs to consider shifting positions or consider packing in. That's the extent to which, you know. But by all means, let's get stuck into Firmino. But for me, Diaz looked electric against Palace when he went more central and was more direct and was closer to their centre-halves. Salah is the player who plays between centre-halves and full-backs. That's what he's done. He's done brilliantly. He does it with the opposition are playing a five. If the opposition are playing a four, that's where he gets his joy. They're both starting. Diaz is deeper. Salah's wider. I just want the footballers who are going to kick it in the goal to be close to the goal.
Yeah, I don't think that there's a very clear plan of attack for Liverpool at the minute. And I think in terms of who's there now, that's the case as well. So obviously, you know, Mane wanted to leave, and you know, that's fine. You can't really change that. But they've now got, obviously he was suspended for this one, but for the previous two games, the choice is between, well, does he start Roberto Firmino up front or Darwin Nunes up front? And you couldn't have two, you know, further apart options to play that role.
Yeah.
And just picking one or the other means that all 10, and I include the goalkeeper in that, all 10 other players have to play really differently, because you've got a completely different man playing down the middle who's meant to be the fulcrum of the entire attack. One of them wants to come short and make little twisty turns and play off other people. The other one wants to be chaos, wants the ball pumped up to him, wants to hold it up for other people, wants to be played in behind, wants to be one-on-one. Two completely opposed strikers. They might literally stand in the same position at kickoff, but that's about all that they've got in common. And so they're playing, when they've played with Firmino so far, it's looked to me a bit like they're trying to play with Diaz, sorry, with Nunes, but he's not on the pitch.
Yeah.
So it would maybe make sense. I still wouldn't agree with it, but it would maybe make more sense to have Salah and Diaz further away if you think you're playing with Nunes and you're trying to get him in behind and you're trying to maybe isolate a centre-half against him and create space in other areas, because maybe two have to go and stand on Nunes. Maybe the right-sided centre-half and the right-back have to double up on Nunes, which leaves space for Diaz wide, and then he can play the ball into the box and whatever can happen. That would possibly make sense. Still don't think it's the right way for Liverpool to play, because it asks loads of players who've been brilliant doing one thing for years to do something that's totally different. So I still wouldn't agree with it. But you can't then do that when you're playing the complete opposite there instead. So a fella that has based his entire game for 7 years for Liverpool,
and arguably 2 years, 3 years for Hoffenheim.
Yeah, around the fact that he's going to be really good in tight spaces. He wants to link up with really narrow, wide forwards either side of him. He's got no interest in being played in one-on-one because he's not quick and he's not that kind of player. So to try and do that makes absolutely zero sense. And it does then fundamentally mean that the two men that are most likely to score a goal, whether it be through some sort of really good move or individual brilliance, are fucking miles away and don't play with each other. I can barely remember in the past few games them two linking up or just playing even a fairly easy pass under little pressure to one another. And you can't have that from your two best attacking players. How often over the, you know, 5 years or whatever it was did we see sometimes Firmino would be cut out and Mane's playing Salah through or the other one and all that sort of thing. That looks impossible at the minute. The idea of...
I don't think Salah would recognise him.
No.
Who's that fella over there?
He plays for us, does he? I think he's right back for them. But so it, you know, none of it just seems to make any sense to me at the minute. And I you know, none of it is about the player really at all, because he's played two matches. But I have a decreasing understanding of why they've signed Darwin Nunes, because it seems like they're not necessarily going to play him all the time, which then compromises absolutely everything else. So why, for example, would you have Alexander-Arnold, who's playing really badly, I get that, but in theory, he's got really good delivery, great on the ball. So if you're going to sign someone who wants crosses played into him, why would you then take that same right back and say, do you want to play number 10? Do you want to play number 10 loads where you can't possibly cross the ball? And you know, none of it seems coherent. None of it seems like a coherent plan that actually makes sense for all involved. It seems like it might help like two people sometimes when they play, and it fucks the other eight.
This is my Darwin thing around this, Dan. I think you actually got to see a bit of it against Palace. We're quite good against Palace in the period where you get to see some of it, but Elliot becomes really central while that's ongoing. The two wide players occupy the really wide space. Darwin's there, and then Elliot's sort of left with the sense that he's going to join, and I think Milner starts that one as well, into the idea that Milner's going to join. But that's where, well, Elliot's young.
And isn't going to play every week, far from it.
And the footballers that we've got who play in the middle of the park have been bought for a purpose that isn't the idea, that they're not 10-goal-a-season men. Yeah. And I'm quite relaxed with them not being 10-goal-a-season men until you begin to set your attack up in a way which could really do with them being 10-goal-a-season men. And that to me is the you know, when you go through all of this, and simultaneously the other thing this does is takes the footballer who 12 months ago was the best attacker in world football, and it gives him another 15 yards to have to wade through before he's by their goal. You know, all of this does not... For me, that's the frustrating part, and that's where I do have a little bit of sympathy still with the midfielders and the midfield question. Yeah. In that, well, they've not been doing this before.
Yeah.
They weren't doing this last August. This wasn't the plan. This hasn't been what they've been brought. This isn't the purpose that these lads have been brought to the club for. No, and it's not what they've been doing in the slightest.
Evolving a team makes loads of sense. You have to do it, otherwise, everyone will become stale. Eventually people will find a way to defend against it that's more efficient and all of that sort of thing, but it has to be an evolution that makes sense. And so far, every way that they've seemingly decided to change, because I don't really buy that it's just all the players doing rogue things, Salah's just deciding to stand on the right byline all the time because that's where I fancy myself. That isn't the case. You know, it has to be founded on logic, and so far it doesn't really seem to be, because it can be totally... it can all come falling down based on if one kind of player isn't available. And that doesn't mean that you just sort of try and go, well, we should buy a clone of, or as effective a clone as we can of all of the starting 11 that we think are the best players. But the differences at the minute are so fundamental, really is one end of the scale to the other. They seem to be able to make neither work. And if you can't make either work, then you're fucked. And even if you can only make one work, as soon as that player's unavailable, either because he's injured or because he's headbutted someone, then again, you're still done for, because you can't then go, oh, well, we'll lash this fella in who's totally different. And I mean, I'm very much looking forward to Jota being back. But again, they've only got five forwards. And therefore, as soon as one is missing, you've suddenly got very few options. You know, say that at some point Nunes is out further down the line and Jota's starting and Firmino's the one on the bench. Firmino's never been particularly good off the bench, and now he's at the point where he seemingly, you know, he's lost a lot of the speed of his game, by which I don't mean pace, but the speed at which he simply turns and passes the ball, then I'm even less enticed by the idea of him coming off the bench and trying to change something. So I understand why people think they might like a midfielder, but I'm suddenly looking at the Liverpool attack and thinking, well, there are two ones there that are back to be regularly available and scoring goals, but they're absolutely miles away from one another, never pass the ball to each other, and are dead far away from the goal. And they're going to have different fellas playing in the middle of them who are going to treat them in entirely different ways. So I just don't understand what do you think a goal or a way of playing looks like.
Yeah, it's a complete inversion, as Dan says, on the way we used to play, in terms, you know, it used to be Firmino who came and sat deeper, and the two sort of quick lads who would bomb on, play off the shoulder, get in behind and create those overloads that Liverpool needed to score as many goals as Liverpool did in the past. I don't know if I'm just misremembering this now, but I don't feel like that went wrong often enough for us to have evolved as quickly with it as we have, in, you know, in the sense that Dan's saying, we've now come to a scenario where Salah and Diaz, I would love to see Salah's average positions and how they've like transitioned down the years, because it does feel like he has got so much deeper. Like, they're trying to give him a run at the fullback, but it seems to be creating more space in the middle for a proper number nine. If that is Darwin, then fair enough. But it's not Roberto Firmino, and that's the issue. It's like in these games, there should be a plan for, you know, it became Sadio Mane. Arguably, what wasn't really Diogo Jota. Diogo Jota is good playing off the shoulder, but he wasn't, you know, he's not close to a traditional number nine. You didn't need your wingers to be that far away from him to give Diogo Jota the space that he needed to operate. It just becomes a bit of a question of like, who is the system built for? Is it built to get the best out of Darwin, who's a brand new sign, who, you know, Stu said before, we've only seen him play two or three games. Is it should it be built for Mo Salah, who, as you say, is the lad who scored the most goals in forever for Liverpool? It feels like I don't know who the system benefits anymore.
On that, they do the signing that they do in January, where they bring in Diaz, yeah. And there's a bit of talk that Diaz, he's not a Sadio Mane clone. He's more of a bit more of a midfield option, a bit more of a winger than necessarily a wide forward. But what's striking to me is he felt like he was unleashed. After we went down to 10 men against Crystal Palace, he felt like it wasn't just the goal. He felt like he was suddenly able to pin centre-half and absolutely put his body in there, do all the bits and pieces. And that's, to me, what blows my mind, is that he could be going and doing that. Like, he genuinely looked like he was enjoying himself more.
He finishes the game as the number nine. Yeah. Like, Fabio Carvalho comes on against Crystal Palace and plays left wing, and Diaz plays as the number nine. It feels like the number nine for Liverpool has become the easiest position to play, in terms of that's the place in the pitch where you're going to get the most success to play. It's a place where you're going to be able to get yourself closest to the goal. But then when we've got Roberto Firmino there, and I don't think it's an issue with Roberto Firmino as such, in that these are, you know, I don't even want to call them limitations to his game, but there are areas of his game that he's never really had, or he's never been asked to you know, produce for Liverpool. And suddenly now, you know, when we need our number nine to be that player who has all the freedom, who plays off the shoulder, who is causing chaos for both centre halves and in the box, we're asking it of a lad who has never done that job. So I don't know what we're expecting. We've become too nice to play against now, because Fulham were able to play, you know, yards and yards ahead of where their line would usually sit. Like Fulham against Wolves, Fulham's line was so much deeper against Wolves than it was against Liverpool, and that should never be the case. Liverpool should be the ones who are able to cause chaos and knock a defence of a lesser team back, and yet they were able to play so high up because you've got a front three there where you're playing for a number nine who is meant to be the one up the top, up in the highest position, causing the most chaos. And then you're asking the lad who comes into midfield, it comes into number six position mostly last night, to come and get the ball.
I totally agree with what Dan and Josh have said there. I think they articulated it great, because at the moment Liverpool look a mess. They look a mess on the pitch. And whether that is because, like I was saying at the beginning of the show, whether that's because it's an attempt at a kickstart at a new evolution, and therefore things can look a bit messy at the beginning, that's all very well and good. But as Dan said, this does not make sense. The strategic and positional changes that are going on do not seem to have any coherence to them. And what you were saying about Diaz in the Palace game, Neil, I think that also aligns with another further problem that we've got. What you said there about him being unleashed, what we saw was a street fighter. What we saw was a really aggressive, almost Suarez-esque performance in that last 20 minutes or whatever from him. And that's so patently missing from the rest of our game. We're so passive. We're so passive right now. We're standing off players. You know, regardless, we can talk all day about the positional changes and all that, but the first thing that should be the required ingredients when those players step onto the pitch, particularly away from home to Manchester United, is bottle, is fight, is aggressiveness. The manager admitted last night they were more aggressive than us. That should not happen. That should not happen. And it, you know, you can be out fought, but you've got to bring the fight yourself. Liverpool are not bringing the fight. So teams are not having to outfight us. We're giving them it. We're passive. We're waving the white flag when we go onto the pitch. So for the combination between positional issues that don't make sense, a potential evolution of the team that doesn't seem to be working and has more questions than answers over, you know, aligned with a passivity that I have never seen from a Jurgen Klopp team that, let's be honest, you know, we can be distracted by, and it's a fair old distraction, the fact that we came close to winning everything last season. But there were some signs in some games that we were becoming a bit more passive and we were having to react instead of being proactive. And we've certainly seen it at the start of this season. So it's time for this team to wake up and start showing a bit of fight, please.
Time for the show a bit of fight. There will be, understandably. I mean, there's no end to the list of footballers I'd buy. You know, you want to name a player from the last 10 years who's knocking around the Premier League. The money I put down for Abdoulaye Doucouré right now is indecent at this point. You know, you want to list them, name the position. It's a shame the big man's gone to Newcastle. Otherwise, we could really get stuck into that. But it'll be difficult to prize them from their grasp at this point, and they're very much buoyed at the moment, Dan. You know, genuinely, if we're going to play this way, I'm just on the idea of what you were saying there. You can make a really strong argument that we'd have been better off in a universe last night where Divock was starting ahead of Roberto Firmino in terms of what we're doing. And we've let Divock go on a free. You know, the idea of backing that position up, I think, is perfectly valid. I've got Ivan Toney written down just simply because he might move on this summer as an example of a footballer. You know, there's a clamour for a midfielder. You know, normally I'd say you'd struggle to get someone to work with the system. But as at the minute, the system involves Andy Robertson playing number nine and Mo Salah playing like Stuart Ripley, then, you know, maybe we don't worry too much about the system and just get some lads in. I mean, I'm up for almost any ideas at this point within reason. But as you said earlier on, the footballers who are currently there who are going to continue to play for Liverpool, they're the ones who've got to sort some stuff out, and so is the manager with them.
Yeah, I at various points last night looked at it and thought that before Firmino and Nunes, I would rather be watching either Origi or Takumi Minamino play number nine for Liverpool. Two totally different players, two players that in the grand scheme of things are not actually good enough to play for Liverpool, and I don't think really, you know, beyond the sort of emotion of it, anyone really thought that we'd miss them. But first of all, they were human beings that existed to play for Liverpool. Liverpool have lost three forwards in the summer and only replaced them with one, and the one is entirely different to anything that we've done for a really very long time, which means that it takes loads of time to get used to. It means that everyone's job has to be different. And I did look at it and think, well, I mean, he'd maybe be a bit of a halfway house here, which for the way that they're playing might make a bit of sense, in that he can drop if he wants to. He was actually better at that than people gave him credit for, but he's also capable of potentially being played in behind.
Linked with Salah.
And he did, you know, I'm not actually saying that the solution to Liverpool's troubles here is going to make it a financial offer to buy Origi back, or that he should have kept Origi, but it's bad that you're at that point, is more what I'm saying, that you're thinking that these two lads who barely got a game beyond the cups, you're sort of reminiscing about and thinking they might have made more sense there, because Liverpool have got a plan that's completely and utterly illogical. So I think it's now hard to sort of say, well, what you would do with that. I would happily have them probably buy a footballer in any position at this point. But if it was me picking, I'd probably want a forward, because I do look at it and think there are so few that I fancy to score a goal. But I've got no idea who that forward is, because I don't know what they want to do. So, if they really want to commit to the idea of Nunes or someone like Nunes, then maybe it'd be by a sort of similar but less good one of them, so that you've always got one. You've always got one to play, and you just go, you know what, we're probably not going to win the league now anyway, so let's spend a year playing domestic football where we really get fucking used to this way of playing, and we make sure that by the time next summer comes around, everyone knows exactly what they're doing. This is the way we're going to go for 5 years. That's how Liverpool play now. Or if it's, well, actually, maybe that isn't really the right idea because it's compromised everyone else. Maybe we should buy somebody who's a bit like Firmino was 5 or 6 years ago and commit a bit more to that. And Nunes, as expensive as he was for a while, is just a chaotic man off the bench that if it's not going well can come on and do mad things and goals might go in. But I don't know which one of them they want to do more of. So
would you buy a midfielder?
Yes, I would have a player in probably every position, because every position is going badly at the moment. Back.
I thought I had the moment before thinking, yeah, I wish we hadn't let Nico Williams go.
No, exactly, but again, that's a player that he played really well sometimes for Liverpool, but fundamentally I don't think he's good enough to play for Liverpool, not at the moment anyway. But yes, I'm looking at it thinking, really good if he could come on 60 here and just be a bit more sensible and probably put the ball in the box a bit better. So the fact that, you know, I'm not really making an argument for any specific kind of player or any player that plays in a specific position, I think is testament to two things. Firstly, how bad everyone is at their job at the minute. But secondly, the fact that Liverpool don't have a coherent way of playing. Because if it was really obvious that this one thing isn't working, you'd go, well, that's where they need the player. And I understand why people have particular concerns around midfield, because there are so many players that are prone to missing football in there. But you could sell me most players, I'd say, at this point, or you could certainly sell me most kinds of players, and that to me is a really bad sign, because you shouldn't be looking at it and going, well, any kind of player in any position would be useful here. It should be one that's fairly obvious, but it isn't.
I'd buy a centre forward and a midfielder. I think the Tony shout's a great one. To be fair, I've spoken with my mates about Tony for a long time. The biggest question mark around him is his goal output. That's his biggest question mark. But his link up play, and the reason I'd look at someone like him is because if you are going to put your eggs in the basket of Nunes, then let's have a fella who, when he's not playing, can do some similar things, can hold the ball up, that we can go a bit more direct to, and that can bring others into play. And Tony, you know, does all of those things. So, you know, you'd look to get someone like him to be a squad player, and at least then the rest of the team would be able to have some consistency ahead of them in the patterns of play, regardless of either one of them, whoever's playing. I'd look to buy a midfielder. I'd be, I know obviously everyone wants Bellingham, and all that, but to be honest, you know, I'd like him as well, but that's something that we seem to be looking at a year down the line, and we'll even see if that happens now. Real Madrid have shown their hand about it, but I really like Barella. I think that Liverpool need a player.
There's no
instead.
Way they're going to sell Barella.
No, I know. I'm just saying what I'd want, because the reason I like Barella, so if they can find another player that has the similar characteristics, I want a player with real aggressiveness, with dynamism, who can do some mad things and be unleashed in that midfield, carry a fight. I think Barella is a real engine. I think he's a real monster when he's on his game in midfield. And, you know, in that right-hand side centre midfield channel where Elliot has played last night, I think it was really unfair to Elliot to put him into that bear pit with that rest of that midfield alongside him. But I think we really needed a bit of a monster in there last night, and for me, Barella would be that shout, or a player of similar characteristics. And I don't have the scouting network.
Yeah, I'm not sure really on the specific name I'd want, but I think it's someone who makes more sense to the system. I think I'm basically in full agreement with Dan, really, that at the moment, the thing that is making the least sense to me is which way we are trying to take the system, which way we're evolving with the system. If you know, Jurgen is trying to change the way that we play in terms of, you know, it coming through a more traditional number nine, and let's go get another one. If he's doing it so that we are pulling our wingers and trying to get someone who runs at the fullbacks, then go and get another one of them. Maybe genuinely there could be any and all ideas I would take for a new player at Liverpool at the moment, because it just feels like we are one or two short of the lads who are being asked to do the job, but currently I can't tell what that is.
For me, what's frustrating is if he wants to play 4-2-4, which I think at times you're not that far away from drawing. Like, and this is the interesting thing, and this is back to my thing. People who have got a clamour for a change of formation, I think you've got one. I think this is it. It's happened in front of your eyes. It's just that because you, the way you view the players is a little bit different to what you think Elliot's doing, et cetera, et cetera. But I think this is, you know, this to me is something that, you know, and I think it has been for a slight period of time. Liverpool are trying to go towards 4-2-4. Then they need to buy some players who suit 4-2-4. It's sort of where I end up. There needs to be, well, this is a 4-2-4 plan. So, you know, if you're saying that it's, if you want a midfielder, for instance, you're playing 4-2-4, or it's 4-2-1-3, maybe the one's currently Elliot, then all the way through the summer, that's been the one I've been saying. If you're going to do a midfielder, do one who plays there, who can join and do bits either way, who can join the forward line and go from there, whether he plays off the right or off the left. Similarly, if you're going to do that, then you need to be really clear who your number nine is and what you want your number nine to be. And then, therefore, you've got to make sure you've got strength and depth around that. And it might be that the manager's going, well, I think I have, because my number one is Darwin, my number two is Jota. Those two are really battling with each other, and my number three is Firmino. But Firmino could be the one who plays in a 4-2-1-3 as the one. You know, he could be able to do the backup work in that area, but you know, and that's what I mean about he's got to maybe change his role. And then from there, then you're looking for two quite flat midfielders. But then he had the option last night to pick two quite flat midfielders. He could have started with Henderson and Fabinho, and pick Carvalho, and had Carvalho looking to do bits. He could have moved. He could have played Diaz number nine and put Firmino behind him and played Carvalho off the left. A lot of this, I'm sure, if he was listening, he'd be just a bit like, you know, I'm proposing a lot of mad stuff there, and we've been working on this and this. But I just sort of think at the minute, I think everyone, you know, I think you're talking about a football team just caught between massive stools. And that's, you know, it might be that we're 2 weeks away from a training ground breakthrough, but if that happens in 2 weeks, we might have dropped points in the first Champions League group game and not won at Goodison Park, and that'd be unforgivable in this season not to win at Goodison Park.
I think the idea of the 4-2-4, like if we are shifting towards that, then fundamentally the issue is that none of those lads are close enough to go. Like I look at Newcastle at the weekend playing against Manchester City, and look, you know, Newcastle for the most of the game are playing on the counter attack and stuff, but when Newcastle have got their foot on the ball and are able to push City back, their four lads who it basically ended up being a 4-2-4, their four lads were all on the edge of the 6-yard box. Basically every time the ball was out wide with Saint-Maximin, or every time it went out on the right to Almiron, they had four lads who were all on the edge of the 6-yard box between the posts. Like, none of our lads look like doing that at the moment. Like the goals we're seeing that Dan was saying before are just sort of happening. That's because the ball is just sort of falling in and around the 6-yard box, and then there happens to be the right man left at the right time, who most of the time is Mo Salah, which shows the value of getting him in between the posts. But yeah, fundamentally there needs to just be more.
It's
of
a great
them
goal.
More of them there.
It's a great finish. It's a great finish.
Technique on the head is brilliant.
It's an unreal finish.
And no other point was he in a position to do anything like that throughout the match, because he's told not to.
And I think he might be a really good goal scorer, Mo Salah. I reckon we should try that.
Excellent stuff from Josh Sexton there. You can't argue with his instincts on that one. With a bit of luck, Mo Salah might prove that. If we just persevere with him at this point of proceedings, Liverpool go to Manchester United. They're absolutely appalling. They're absolutely rubbish. It's amongst one of the worst Liverpool performances that you'd ever see in a game of that stature. Draining this. See you in a bit. Sports Social Podcast Network.